Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari, Gopi Jana Balaba Kiri Baradhari, Gopi Jana Malaba Kiri Baradhari, Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana, Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Manachari, Yamuna Tira Manachari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunya Bihari, Gopi Jana Balagaba Kiri Badadhari, Gopi Jana Malaba Kiri Badadhari, Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana, Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Manachari, Yamuna Tira Manachari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Gopi Jana Malaba Giri Baradhari, Gopi Jana Malaba Giri Baradhari, Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana, Yashoda Nandana Raja Jana Ranjana, Yamuna Tira Manachari, Yamuna Tira Manachari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari, Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. So Jai Om Vishnupad, Paramahamsa Paramahacharya, author of Sri Srimad, His Divine Grace of Ayachalana, the Vakrabhananda Goswami, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, ISKCON Founder Acharya, Srila Prabhupada Kijai, Ananda Goti, Vaishnav Vrinda Kijai, Namacharya Shilohidas Thakur Kichai Prem Say Gahol Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shidwaita Gadadha Shri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Kichai Shri Shri Radha Krishna Govigavada Sayam Kun Radhakunda Giri Govardhan Kichai Vrindavadam Kichai Maturanam Kichai Jagadada Sami Kichai Yamunamai Kachai, Shimati Gulasi Devi Kachai, Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Kachai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Go. All glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious the assembled devotees, all glorious to Shri Guru and Gauranga Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai, Gaur Premananda Hari Hari Go. So we're just having to adjust my phone to broadcast on Facebook on a separate internet connection. Okay, so today we are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, 10th canto. Let me make sure this phone is all right. We're reading from the 10th canto, Reading from 16th chapter, text 30. So maybe I'll put that text up for you so you can see at the same time. Let me Great. All right. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay. Tat Chitra Kandava Virugna Vana Sahasro Raktam Mukar Uruvaman Ripa Bhagna Gatraha Sritva Chara Chara Gurum Purusham Puranam Narayanam Tam Aranam Manasa Jagama. Okay, then we'll do the whole verse. Atas-chit-sritan-nava-virugna-phala-sahasro Raktam-mukaru-vaman-ripa-bhagna-gatra Smitva-chara-chara-gurum-purusham-paranam Narayanam-tam-maranam-manasat-chakama Atas-chit-sritan-nava-virugna-phala-sahasro Raktam mukaru vaman ripa bhagna gatra smritva charat charapunum purusham puranam narayanam tam maranam manasa jagama tat chit shritanava virubna pana sahasro raktam mukaru vaman ripa bhagna gatra Smitva charachara gurum purusham puranam Narayanam tam maranam manasa jagama. All right. And now we will do the word by word synonyms. Tat of him. Chitra, amazing. Tandava, by the powerful dancing. Virugna, broken. Pana Sahasra is 1,000 hoods. Raktam, blood. Mukahai, from his mouths. Uru, profusely. Vaman, vomiting. Nripa, O King Parikshit. Bhagnagatraha, his limbs crushed. Smritva, remembering. Chara achara, of all moving and non-moving beings. Gurum, the spiritual master. Purusham, the personality of Godhead. Puranam, ancient. Narayanam, Lord Narayana. Tam, to him. Aranam, for shelter. Manasa, within his mind. Jagama, he approached. So, the translation is, my dear King Parikshit, Lord Krishna's wonderful, powerful dancing trampled and broke all of Kali's 1,000 hoods. Then the serpent, profusely vomiting blood from his mouths, finally recognized Sri Krishna to be the eternal personality of Godhead, the supreme master of all moving and non-moving beings, Sri Narayana. Thus, within his mind, Kali took shelter of the Lord. And I'll repeat. My dear King Parikshit, Lord Krishna's wonderful, powerful dancing trampled and broke all of Kaliya's 1,000 hoods. Then the serpent, profusely vomiting blood from his mouth, finally recognized Sri Krishna to be the eternal personality of Godhead, the supreme master of all moving and non-moving beings, Sri Narayana. Thus, within his mind, Kaliya took shelter of the Lord. So purport by the servants of Srila Prabhupada. In chapter 16 of Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Srila Prabhupada points out that whereas previously Kaliya was vomiting poison, now his poison was exhausted and he began to vomit blood. Thus he had been cleansed of the vile contamination within his heart that had manifested as serpent's venom. The word smritva, remembering, is very significant here. The wives of Kaliya were actually serious devotees of Lord Krishna, and according to the acharyas, they had often tried to convince their husband to surrender to him. Finally, finding himself in unbearable agony, Kaliya remembered his wife's advice and took shelter of the Lord. Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur explains that Kaliya's arch rival had traditionally been Garuda, the carrier of Vishnu. But now Kaliya realized that he was fighting an opponent who was thousands of times stronger than Garuda and who could therefore be only the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Thus, Kaliya took shelter of Lord Krishna. Very nice. All right. So, let me read the Sanskrit again.
Tatschitratanabaviragvirugnapalasahasro raktam mukaravum vamanripabhagnakatra smritva charachara gurum purusham puranam narayanam tam maranam manasajagama.
So, Om Gana Timirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Miditam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So this is very, very interesting. In this particular verse, there's many topics we can talk about. And one of the first topics I'm going to talk about is something called theodicy. Theodicy means the justice of Theo, who is God. Theos, who is God. So this is a common question that is asked of us or asked of religious people. How can there be a God when there is evil or bad things happening? And of course, people have addressed that in different ways. There was a Jewish rabbi named Kushner, not Krishna, who wrote a book entitled Why Bad Things Happen to Good People, Good Things Happen to Bad People. And he said, well, God's a good guy. He just sort of lost, to summarize the book so you don't have to read it. So he just lost control. You know, he created the universe, nice guy. But, you know, got out of hand. You know, what can he do? God is there, the creator. But, you know, he's not really doing everything in this world because it's a little bit too much for him. Anyway. So there's many different atheistic arguments that people use on this particular issue. You know, there's justice. So why are people suffering? Or why? We can even ask the question, why do great devotees suffer? You know, why do we have like Srila Prabhupada being gored by a bull? Why did Srila Prabhupada have these heart attacks? Why did Srila Prabhupada suffer? Of course, we know he was detached, but why was he in a physical condition at the time of leaving this world in Vrindavan, India? So, you know, there is that question, and then also the question of regular people. You know, why so much suffering? I mean, you see this coronavirus right now. There's so much suffering going on in this world. And so that's a common argument the atheists use. You know, if God exists, why would there be suffering? If God is the actual God you're describing, who is all good, all knowing, and all powerful, all those old stuff, all stuff, all stuff, yeah, all Not all good. All good. Got to watch my pronunciation. All good. All knowing. All powerful. Then what's happening here? Well, we have to understand something that is very interesting. It's called teleology. That's another branch of philosophy. That means, what is the purpose of this world? Until one understands the purpose of this world, then one cannot understand how there can be all this stuff going on and be a God who's all good, all knowing, all powerful simultaneously. Well, the purpose of this world is to rectify us. And Prabhupada gave the example many times of a prison house. You know, if the government is all good, why are the prisoners being kept in prison? Well, guess what? They're criminals. And the whole purpose of the prison, hopefully, is restorative justice, which means to actually get them back as honest people. Of course, not all prisons are like that, but hopefully, you know, theoretically, the prison should be like that. So, to get people back into their original, like, constitutional, mundane position in the prison house. So the same thing is, this material world is described as like a prison house. So the whole purpose of everything that is happening is to teach us different lessons, perhaps in different species of life as we're going up or going down from the human species. But that is the purpose. That's called teleology. Once one understands the purpose, then you can understand why there is suffering in this world. And here we have Kaliya in this particular circumstance, who is being subjected to suffering. Don't think that he wasn't suffering. I mean, if someone danced on your head, of course I'd like to have Krishna dance on my head, but if someone like kept smashing your head, or, you know, with his case, he had 1,000 heads. If someone kept smashing your head and you were just vomiting, in his case, he was vomiting, of course, blood at this point, but previously, you know, fire and all that other stuff. So if someone did that to you, you'd be in pain. He is in pain. And so to relieve his pain, he's surrendering. So that's really what's happening in this world. Yes, there is pain. However, on another, from another angle of vision, the pain is caused by attachment. If you weren't attached, you wouldn't have pain. And I've spoken about this many times before. The things that you think are yours or that you're identifying with, if those things are threatened, those things are broken, those things are taken away, then you experience pain. And the things that are not yours, you don't identify with, you don't experience pain. So this body we're identifying with, and that's why we're experiencing the pain in the body. The car that we're attached to, I've given that example many times. If something happens to the car, we will experience anxiety, which is a sort of pain or some sort of disturbance. You know, even people have heart attacks because their car gets destroyed, or something happens to their car, or there's some financial difficulty. People are in anxiety now because of financial difficulty. But people generally don't get in anxiety because of someone else's financial difficulty. Anyway, so really the pain in one sense is an illusion. Just like in that nice movie, The Matrix, the enjoyment and the pain was simply an illusion because someone was connected, his neurons or his brain was connected to this whole computer simulation. Okay, so really this is the point. That's brought Kaliya to the point of surrendering. Now, why doesn't difficulty bring everybody to the point of surrendering? This is an interesting question. That, you know, a lot of people have difficulty and pain, but they don't surrender. They remain stubbornly obstinate. And they just become atheists at the time of death, or they don't. So the reason that he actually surrendered, which is quite an interesting point. The reason he actually surrendered was that he had previously gotten the Bhakti Lata Bij from his guru. All right, so this is an interesting question and something that will enliven all you ladies who are listening. So, who was his guru? This is described by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur in his commentary, that Kaliya's guru, or let's use a plural, were his wives. Interesting. Because Kaliya's wives implanted the Bhakti Lata Bija in his heart. It's not my imagination, invention. This is actually Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur. So that is the guru's function. We hear this word, this verse from the Chaitanya Charitamrita. Brahmanda Brahmate Konna Bhagyavan Jiv Guru Krishna Prasadi Vaya Bhakti Lata Bija. Now, what does that verse state? That the living entity is wandering in this material universe from one body to another, one planet to another, one universe to another. And finally, he or she gets the Bhakti Lata Bija. Now, the Bhakti Lata Bija means the seed of the creeper of devotion. Because no one can approach the Supreme Absolute Truth, Krishna, it is, or one of his various expansions, incarnations, avatars, unless one gets the mercy of a devotee. It's impossible. It's impossible. And of course, the original guru is Balaram. Maima, Atma, Bala, Hine, Na, Labwa. The statement is that no one can make any spiritual benefit without getting Balaram's mercy. And so in this particular case, and I really want to unpack this point, in this particular case, his gurus who gave him the Bhakti Lata Bij, that means bona fide gurus, were his wives. And it's also mentioned by Jiva Goswami, I believe, that his wives were not really that attached to him. They were actually pretty detached. And they weren't so interested in him. I mean, they tried to give him so many instructions. It's described, they tried it hundreds of times. They told him about Krishna before. I mean, of course, the statement is Upadesho hi morkanam prakopayana shantaye, that if you give a fool good instructions, it just simply makes him angry. Upadesho hi morkanam. If you give a morka, a fool, good instruction, it simply makes them angry or perhaps more foolish or committing offenses. But because he was committing offenses, then the Bhakti Lata Bij did not fructify. Or the dust in his heart never became cleared up. So he was committing offenses, and the offenses were mitigated by his getting kicked in the head. Some of us really need to be kicked in the head by Krishna's illusory energy. Of course, I wouldn't mind getting kicked in the head by Krishna directly. That would be pretty cool. He would leave his mark on my head, his footprint. Come to the temple one day and there'd be a footprint of Krishna on my head. That would be ecstatic. Sometimes devotees, they go to the tattoo parlor and they make a tattoo of Krishna's footprint, but that doesn't count. So anyway, so he became purified by getting Krishna, and then the ladies became more interested in preaching to him and saving him when he surrendered. Now, it's interesting in this story that the ladies didn't go and pray, which are going to be reading the prayers in a few days of the Nagapatnis. Nagapatnis means the wives of the serpent. So it's interesting, the ladies didn't pray that he would be forgiven until he came to his senses. But first he had to come to his senses, which basically meant he got rid of all the poison, and then he came to his senses. So in regard to coming to the senses, I'm going to show you something very, very interesting. Because the bhakti that we are aspiring for is naturally in our hearts. And coming to our senses means to clear out the dust or get rid of the anarthas, and then the bhakti becomes manifest. So sometimes it's mentioned the bhakti lata bija is implanted in the heart, but it's the bhakti lata bija, the bhakti is inherently in the heart too. It's there. Your constitutional nature is in the heart. And I will prove that right now by showing you a very nice quote by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in his commentary on the Shikshashika, the first verse of the Shikshashika. Hold on one second, and here we go. There we go. So, let me zoom in on that. So, let me read this. When by sincerely following the process of hearing and chanting, the first rays of pure devotion finally appear on the horizon of the sadhaka's heart, then Bhakti Devi, who is the eradicatress, now that's an interesting word you don't hear very often, eradicatress, let's just circle that. Okay. Eradicatress, that means she, it's feminine. Because otherwise be eradicator, eradicatress, of all unwanted material desires. So when you get the bhakti lata bij and it fructifies, it eradicates all unwanted material desires. That's what we call anarthas from yesterday's class, that are detrimental to the Lord's service. In other words, desires that take us away from Krishna are eradicated by Bhakti or Bhakti Devi. And Bhakti Devi is independence. But she comes from Krishna's devotee, not from Krishna directly. Krishna's devotee, when we hear from Krishna's devotee, we get the Bhakti Lata Bija, which is Bhakti Devi. She's a person. Try to remember that. Bhakti is a person. And she eradicates unwanted material desires detrimental to the Lord's service. And this eclipses the avidya potency. All right, let's just talk about what avidya is. There's avidya. Avidya is the opposite of vidya. Knowledge. So avidya means ignorance. So she eclipses the avidya potency. And just like in the Gita, let me try to think of what verse that is. 5:16, I think it is. One is enlightened by the knowledge by which nescience is destroyed, then his knowledge reveals everything, just like the sun coming up in the morning. In other words, when the sun comes up in the morning, it reveals what's already there. It's the lack of the sun that keeps you from seeing what's already there. In other words, maya hai andhakar. Maya is darkness. Maya is the absence of Krishna. That's the nature of maya. Arate ritam napratiyeta napratiyeta chatmani tad vidyat atmano mayam yatavasha yatatamaha. So anyway, the Krishna's illusory energy is described as that reflection which appears in darkness. In other words, it's darkness. Krishna Surya Sam. Krishna is the sun. Okay. So here's more. By suffusing the soul with spiritual knowledge, Bhakti Devi destroys both the gross and subtle coverings of the soul. Wow. In other words, exactly what I've been saying the last few days, that by devotion, that's love, keeps us focused, and the devotion itself, devotion to Krishna, actually eradicates the ignorance and eradicates our attachments to the gross and subtle coverings. Gross coverings means pancha mahabhuta, this thing, you know, we're walking around. Flesh, blood, hair, no hair. So it eradicates the coverings of the soul. It's interesting. And then you see where you're at. Simultaneously, the jiva's original spiritual form. I should note that down too. Hold on a second. Original spiritual form. Got it. That means we have an original spiritual form. Becomes manifest. In other words, the original spiritual form was original. It was originally there. It's not something new, but it's originally there. It's covered. Becomes manifest so that he acquires the form of a gopi, for example. Not necessarily a gopi. It could be a cowherd boy. It could be a tree. It could be, let's say, a mother or father of Krishna. If his pure devotional propensities are steeped in the conjugal mood. In other words, gopi only if one's in the conjugal mood. Thus it stands proven that Krishna's holy name is the life and soul of all transcendental knowledge. Vidya Vadu Jivanam. So the Bhakti Lata Bija, get this, is getting Krishna's holy name from a pure devotee. The Swarup Shakti, Swarup means one's own form, potency, the spiritual potency, is therefore often said to be Krishna's wife, Vidyavada, the wife of knowledge, Jivanam, which is the of the Jiva, which gives the Jiva a knowledge. So anyway, so let me continue with this. When the gross and subtle material bodies of a Jiva are completely destroyed, the infinitesimal soul, that doesn't mean you die. Because you don't want to have your gross body destroyed. Oh my God, if I chant Hare Krishna too much, this thing gets destroyed. It's worse. Chanting Hare Krishna is worse than the coronavirus. So, no. When the gross and subtle material, the attachment to the gross and subtle material bodies are destroyed, and the subtle material body is dissolved, and you actually have your pure mind, Shuddha Habi Mana, and pure consciousness, the infinitesimal soul, that's us, infinitesimal means tiny, 10,000th tip of the hair, which means no material dimension, regains, there's that word, regains. Regains means we had it before. If I say, you know, I lost my wallet and I regained it, means I had my wallet before. It doesn't mean I never had it. His original pristine purity. Okay, let's go there. Pristine purity. Pristine means, actually it's like repeating the same thing. Purity, pristine, purity is pristine. Although the jiva is anu, that means small, minutely small, his capacity for spiritual happiness is not minute. Wow. Although we are tiny, our capacity for happiness is unlimited. Wow. Isn't that attractive? In this material realm, our capacity for happiness is limited. It's limited to the cessation of pain or the cessation or some need that gets fulfilled. I have a need for food. And so once that's fulfilled, the need for food goes away, the hunger goes away, and I don't want to eat anymore. But in the spiritual world, spiritual realm, the happiness you get increases. Anandam buddhi vardhanam. Pratipadam purnamritasvadanam. Sorry, I was going to read the Shikshashika verse. It increases at every step. Wow. Not only is it unlimited. Ocean is used here. But it increases, the ocean increases. The ocean by itself is pretty unlimited, but imagine if it kept increasing. Well, it may with global warming. That's another subject matter. So let's just read the Shikshashika verse. Cheto darpanam arjanam bhava mahadvagni nirvapanam shreyakai ravi chandraka vitaram vijayavadu jivanam ananna buddhi vardhanam pratipadam pranamritas vadanam sarvatmasnapanam param vijayate shri krishna sankirtanam. So the same thing here, the cheto of the heart, darpana of the mirror, that's us. The mirror of the heart is dirty. So marjanam becomes cleansed. And our material existence, remember I said bhava is material existence. Bhava is emotion. The material existence, which is Mahadava Agni, which is like a blazing forest fire, becomes extinguished, nirapana. And this is like, of course, this is a very poetic expression, the good fortune, the white lotus good fortune, the moonshine, like the moonshine, which spreads everywhere. And it gives one knowledge, Vadu Jivanam, we described this before. Anandam Buddhi Vardhanam. It is an ocean of increasing transcendental bliss at every step. And again, the Purna Amrita, full nectar. Purna means full, Amrita means nectar. And Ashvadhanam gives us a taste for every one, gives everyone a taste. And it's like bathing of the soul. Bathing of the soul, transcendental param, bathing of the soul, that basically makes us victorious. And the way to do it is, again, Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. Krishna Sankirtanam is in one sense on the Raghunuga platform. Yesterday we were talking about this, and I wanted to clarify this in today's class, that to actually perform the strict definition of Raghunuga Bhakti, it's required. Strict definition means you're meditating on your spiritual identity in the spiritual world, and like that, or you're following the footsteps of someone who has a similar spiritual identity, who is a Raghatmika devotee. I'm not going to get into the details. That one has to be on the platform of Asakti. But to have this aspect of Raghunuga Bhakti, the Bhagavat Vidhi, the chanting of the Lord's holy name, the congregational chanting, the reaching out to others, that you can have even in the beginning by taking part in Lord Chaitanya's Sankirtan movement. Sri Krishna Sankirtan, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam. So what does that mean? Exactly. That we should be thinking our rag, or the footsteps, or the person who we're following the footsteps of, should be His Divine Grace of the Prabhupada, our spiritual master. And we should be thinking of their pleasure. And that's Raghunuga from a different standpoint, maybe not the strict original definition, but that's Raghunuga. Okay, so on that happy note, so let me just read the full translation here. Let there be all victory for the chanting of the holy name of Krishna, which can cleanse the mirror of the heart and stop the miseries of blazing fire material existence. That chanting is the waxing moon that spreads the white lotus of good fortune for all living entities. It is the life and soul of all education. The chanting of the holy name of Krishna expands the blissful ocean of transcendental life. It gives cooling effect to everyone like a moon and enables one to taste nectar at every step. So this is very enlightening. I mean, I'm enlightened. I don't know about all of you. So just one final point I wanted to make here, which is actually an important point and hopefully won't be a political statement, that we've... of course, that means it will be. Anyway, so we find here that the ladies became the gurus of Kaliya. So there is some discussion, you know, about ladies' position in the Krishna consciousness movement or ladies' position in Krishna consciousness. Well, I got news for you. We're not the body. For those of you who don't know that, sorry to relate that particular subject matter to you. We are not the body. So, kiva vipra kiva nyasi shudra kena naya Krishna tapa veta se guru vaya. So if someone knows the science of Krishna, it doesn't matter if they're men, women, child too. We have children gurus. What is that? The four Kumaras. Right? Four Kumaras. They're 5 years old. I mean, who's going to accept a guru that's 5 years old? We actually have one young boy, not quite five, he's much older than five, in our community, who's almost like a guru. Whenever I see him, I think he's a guru. His name is Ayush. But anyway, so he looks like a little Madhvacharya. Like that, which amazing. So anyway, so apart from that standpoint, so do we have evidence of ladies who are extremely advanced in devotional service, more advanced than men? Yes, we do. I mean, Kaliya, perfect example there. And I'll just end class by showing you some pictures of other ladies who are very spiritually advanced, who we hear from on a regular basis. So Krishna consciousness for everyone. We're not the bodies, Prabhu or Prabhi or whatever you are, or Mata or Mataji or Prabhuji or Pitaji, whatever you are. We are not the bodies. That's it. Something new for all of you. So here's something that we can all think about. So here are four great ladies. And first lady is Gangamata Gosamini, who you see here. And she initiated a great king, and she was a pure devotee of Lord Jagannath. I'm not going to tell you all the stories. Here's Janabamata, who was the head of all the Vaishnavas. Here's Queen Kunti, whose prayers we read regularly. Probably published a whole book about her prayers, considering her to be one of the greatest devotees of the Lord. And finally, we have here the wives of the Yajnik Brahmanas. I'll make that a little bigger so you can see. The picture is a little bit pixelated, sorry. So the wives of the Yajnik Brahmanas, interesting story about this, is that Krishna, he wanted something, and tell it very quickly. Krishna was hungry, so he sent the coward boys to the husbands of these particular ladies who are Brahmanas doing a sacrifice, and the husbands basically ignored the coward boys when they said that Krishna was hungry and that Krishna wanted something to eat. And so then the coward boys went back, and then Krishna said, ask their wives. And so then Krishna asked the wives of the Brahmanas. And the wives of the Brahmanas grabbed all the food, ignored their husbands, came to see Krishna. So who is more spiritually advanced? And the Brahmanas, even later on, when they realized that they were in Maya, they actually didn't even want to go to see Krishna because they were afraid of this individual called Kamsa. So spiritual advancement, being a guru, is not at all contingent upon the physical body you have, whether you're old or young, like that. Even Krishna spoke the Vedic literatures in the Hayagriva incarnation with a horse head. So who wants to accept a horse as a guru? But in that particular case, it was. Anyway, so on that happy note, we will open up everything for questions. So who has a question? Just ask your question or forever hold your peace. Speak now. Yes. Oh, Champaka. Okay, speak.
Yes, I'm wondering if it's ever possible or ever legitimate for a guru and disciple to switch roles, whether in one life or over the course of several lives. I'm thinking about, like, in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we had some examples where, you know, a father said he might be my son, but he's actually my guru, or there's also he might be my younger brother, he's actually my older brother.
Well, we actually have, in the case of Madhvacharya and Ramanujacharya, who had Mayavadi gurus, their guru actually became their disciple later on. As far as switching roles, oh my God, I don't know which one of you I want to be my guru. Anyway, it's your life. Prabhupada is my guru. Anyway, so in any case, I haven't found any examples from one lifetime to another. That would be pure speculation. But if you got a Mayavadi guru, then he can become your disciple once he takes up devotional service. Good question. Champaka is the master teacher in Nuvaloka. Nobody comes to education but through her. She's Mother Ermila's daughter. That's her claim to fame. So,
I'm thinking more like Shiksha Guru relationships rather than Diksha Guru. I mean, I don't know. Even those, I guess, maybe could be a little fluid. But I'm specifically asking about, you know, a devotee guru, like maybe a guru who introduced someone to Krishna consciousness.
Oh, yeah. Maybe the Padma Pradarshika guru, right.
Yeah. So
that's a good point.
Is that actually, like, proper etiquette? Or, like, okay?
Yeah. I mean, I actually, in the case of Dhruva Maharaj, that's a good point. He was the one who was actually responsible for saving his mother. Because when he became completely Krishna conscious, then even though he didn't preach to his mother, become the guru of his mother, by his mercy, the mother was able to mount the other airplane behind him. So, yeah, that's an interesting point. Yeah, that sometimes the Siksha guru can become the disciple of someone anyway. But Diksha Guru, I haven't found any instances of that. Good question. So any other questions or comments?
Hare Krishna Gurudev.
Hey, Prema. Okay.
In Bhajana Rahasya,
yeah.
Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes under, I think this is under chapter... Under the, I think it's under anatta-nibbitti. So he says, if one makes no effort to become free from anarthas, he will meet with misfortune, being unable to receive the mercy of the holy name. Without receiving the mercy of the name, one will be unable to remove his anarthas despite repeated attempts. But if one cries sincerely at the lotus feet of the name, then within a few days, all anarthas will vanish. So my question is, why is that happening?
Maybe you have to cry louder or something. I mean, you really have to become materially exhausted, convinced. One actually has to become convinced that there's no happiness in this world. You know, we can cry, you know, Krishna, please save me. But, you know, I'm also thinking, but save me, but don't do this and don't do this and don't do that. Because, you know, be a little kind to me. So I think our crying has to be with full intention. Okay? All right.
So it's a question.
It's a good question. Okay, who else has a question?
Krishna Gurudev.
Yes.
Gurudev, one gets Bhakti Lata Bij, like getting a holy name from pure devotee. If that person eventually falls down, and is it possible that that person can go into lower species and still there is a chance that will regain Krishna consciousness because has got Bhakti Lata Bij? Hare Krishna Gurudev.
I muted myself. Okay, got it. So if the person falls down, you don't lose your bhakti lata bees. It's just you forget it for some time. And generally, you know, if one is engaged in devotional service, they're not going to be taking an animal body in the next life unless they do something really radical so that the spiritual master rejects them. But you have to be really radical to do that. All right?
Okay, good day.
Okay, who else has a question? Oh, Lalita Sundari.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj. Yeah, Praneshwar.
Oh, Praneshwar. Okay, let Praneshwar go first since he's in India and he's under lockdown. Okay, what's up, Praneshwar?
So, Gurudev, like we have we have so much anxiety in everything, but still the mind is not convinced to not attach and not have anxiety. Like, mind is not convincing for not to attach with the things and not have anxiety. So what to do in this?
Associate with someone who is convinced.
Yes.
Here. The only way to conquer that problem is just hearing from someone who is convinced and someone who is advanced in devotional service. Oh, who's with you, Praneshwar?
Yes, my mother.
Oh, your mother. Hare Krishna, mother. Mataji.
Thanks.
Good to see you. Mataji. So in that case, Mataji is the appropriate term. Okay, so, all right, one other question, because it's 7:33 here. One other question. Lady Sundari, you had a question.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Okay. My question is, so the receiving the name from a guru, does anyone who comes, like, receive this from Prabhupada from the beginning, or is this meant as diksha? And the second part of the question is, how is with the one's spiritual progress before diksha initiation? Is he advancing?
Okay, that's good.
How
yeah.
is it?
Receiving the name Bhakti Lata Bij can be from Prabhupada, yes, and that's not necessarily diksha. Although first initiation is a type of diksha, it's the preliminary, as Srila Prabhupada would say. But the Bhakti Lata Bij is given by someone who is qualified as a guru. So otherwise, how could someone give the Bhakti Lata Bij unless they can transmit spiritual energy? What was the second question you had?
How is one advancing before getting initiation? Is he advancing?
How is one advancing before taking initiation? One is advancing by hearing the holy name from the pure devotee. And, of course, one cannot achieve spiritual perfection before without taking initiation. The reason being is that if you think that you can get away without taking initiation, that is an offense on chanting. That's disobeying the order of the spiritual master. You understand? So the process is given by the acharyas. Whoops. Keep getting messages on my phone. Anyway. the same time. That's the problem with keeping the phone open at the same time. So now one to actually achieve spiritual perfection, one needs the guidance of a spiritual master and initiation by a spiritual master. Okay? All right, I think we're going to end here. Thank you very much for joining us. All glory is to His